Good evening, one and all. A Tuesday, I know, another week started, and here it is. Well, middle of July, and it feels it here in Connecticut where I am. It's been hot and humid, shall I say. But I am here, and so's my guest. Welcome, as I say, to another Book and a Chat. Well, when people have a loss, you know, it's the end of the world. It takes you down from the depths to the darkest, deepest, darkest depths. But then sometimes from those depths of despair, things can start bringing you back, can take you to heights, things that you'd never even thought about can inspire you and your life. Not just that, when people, especially people when they're taken away from you way before their time, do they really leave you? Or is there some sort of connection that you can have with them? We've had several people on the show before who've written books about the fact that they've still been able to talk to their children, you know, through one form or another, or get some sort of message from them even after they've gone. Well, my guest today, she has written a terrific book about such things, and not just written the book, she is living the life to help other people along the way. And I better introduce her. And I haven't even checked how to say her last name, but I'd like to have on my show today the one and only Marcy Heath. It's either Robitaille or Robitelli. Hi, Marcy, how are you?
Me.
So how do you say your last name?
It's actually French, and it's Robitaille.
Robitaille. See, I'm looking Italian, but French I can understand. Robitaille. Yep. Okay. Marcy, thank you very much for being on the show today. It's great because we caught you in the middle of sort of getting in and out of the car, and you've had to run in to get your phone plugged in and everything, but you are here, and that is the important part.
And happy for it.
Right.
Thank you.
You've written this terrific book, which goes from basically the depths of despair into sort of realization that there's good can come out of stuff. And it's called Wish You a Good Journey. So what happened to start you writing this book?
So I lost my 17-year-old daughter in a tragic car accident in January of 2010. She was on her way to school in her car. She'd had her license maybe a year, but she hit snow and ice and was only moments from our house, and she went into a spin and hit a random fire hydrant.
Oh,
and
dear.
Yeah, it was lights out. You know, I didn't even have any recollection that anything was going on. Life Flight was coming into the cornfields next to our home and taking our daughter away, and I got contacted by the police. I had been out of my home, and I returned, and there was a message. So we had to travel to University of Massachusetts to see her, and she was in a state of, I guess, I don't know what the word would be. She had an irreversible brain injury. So to look at her, by all appearances, she looked just great, but she had broken her leg, and she was just out of it. So after a couple of days, you know, she was on life support. They
right.
did an array of different, yeah?
No, I said right, thank you. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, they did an array of different tasks, and we actually had to make the decision to say goodbye to our 17-year-old daughter. I didn't really know I was going to write a book. I started journaling right off, and I think it was because I didn't want to forget anything and the way that things had happened. So I started writing, and maybe about 3 months in, I had the blessing of a new grandson. My son, my other child, gave me the gift of a grandson, and I was rocking him in the nursery and just really feeling melancholy, you know, thinking about my own children. I was tearful, and he went to sleep, and I put him in his crib, and I went to the mirror to wipe my makeup, to check my makeup, and there was a little fortune pasted to the mirror, and it said, "Wish you a good journey."
Wow.
And I don't know, it just shocked me, you know, to see that. My daughter liked to collect her little fortunes from the fortune cookies. I still find them in random places in her bedroom. And this is 7 years later. I still
wow.
find them. Yeah, so that was pivotal for me. I just decided that it was not for me to be in dark despair. She would be really upset by that I would need to maybe pick up myself and try to do something to move forward.
Now, I mean, losing losing anybody is tragic, but losing somebody so young, and as you say, that just sort of seeing there, and as far as she looked, it was just a broken leg and that sort of thing. You didn't know that vegetation had set in. I mean, there was nothing, no brain thing. That must have been a hard decision to turn off the life support for a start.
You know, it was, and I will go back a bit. You know, the very first night, my husband and I, we went to the chapel and we prayed, and you know, I sat there and I said to him, "Let's just sit here and see if we can hear God's voice in this." And I feel like I sensed God's booming voice in me. It wasn't audible, but it was just a feeling I had inside that He was telling me, "I am in control." And at that time, my sister came and she said, "You know, Mackenzie's heart rate has gone through the roof. The doctor said we needed to come get you." So we went back to her room and they rallied around her for, say, 5-6 minutes and was able to bring her back. But then the doctor said to me, "You know, we were able to save her this time, but what are we going to do next time?"
Right.
"Because there will be a next time." And it really, you know, it just made us really think about what was the right thing to do. And then they approached us maybe the next day and asked us about donating her organs.
Right. See, I can understand that. We had, not so young, but we lost both my other half's parents within like 3 months of each other. And we were there with her father, you know, when he passed. And like you said, they brought him back the first time. And we don't know, we can't do it again, you know. There's no sort of good
hope.
Well, not just hope, that there's no sort of good life left. You can't, as you say, what's
exactly
going to happen next time and the next time and the next time, you know, you can't go on living like this, this sort of thing. And it obviously, understand with yourselves, you know, the fact that you had to make the decision. But then, as you started to say, that her death was beneficial to other people in a way.
It was, yeah. It wasn't a quick decision. It took us probably 3 hours between Mackenzie's daddy and her brother and I sitting there and just trying to decide what would be the best thing for her. I mean, her brother and I both believed that would be what she would have wanted, but her daddy had a really hard time with making the decision that we would actually have to say goodbye to her and leave her there in the hospital alone. Mm. You know, it was a tough decision, but I'm really happy we made that decision.
And I mean,
it turned out, yeah.
I know you don't know. I believe they don't tell you who the organs and that go to, but I mean, do you know how much help she's been able to provide other people?
Well, it is all very confidential, and in the very beginning, say a month after I got the first letter, so the way it works is the organ banks talk to each other, so you don't know where in the country. I mean, I said that the organs could probably go in the United States or Canada, because I knew I wanted to eventually try to, you know, connect with these people. So we just knew that it was somewhere on the East Coast. Got a letter from the first family of the man that received her liver, and they thanked us and, you know, just told us that he was a grandfather and a father and a husband, and just how happy they were that, you know, we made the decision we did. So I decided to write a letter to all of the recipients, and I sent it to New England Organ Bank and asked them to pass it along. And they did, but it's a very long, cumbersome process when you do it this way, because the other organ bank will have to reach out to the recipient's family and say, "We have a letter from the donor family. Do you want to receive it?" And then they mail it. And it's just a very long, cumbersome process. But eventually, I had heard the first year from three of the people, and that included the man that has my daughter's heart. And at the time, he was 70.
Wow.
And he's just a terrific guy. So since I have communicated with five, and I've met three of the people, and including the man that has her heart. And he's actually gone to some book signings with me and signed my book.
Oh, great.
And he wrote chapter two. He wrote chapter two of the book. Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and you look at the reviews and people are like, we love Larry. He's a very funny guy.
I mean, I didn't realize you could do that to get contact with the people. But obviously, you know, the fact, as you said, it's a bit of a long way round because, you know, you give it to one thing and then it goes off to the other people and then they had to give the okay that they would just receive the thing from
we
you.
We finally had to sign legal documents.
That's what
there
I wondered,
a few of us,
yeah.
We had finally... Yeah, we decided we really wanted to exchange information. So there was the three of us. You know, I've met one of the girls that has her kidney, the man that has her pancreas, and the man that has her heart. And so we had to sign legal documents, just kind of taking the organ banks out of the loop so that we could exchange information and eventually meet. I had the blessing of attending the man that has her daughter's pancreas. His eldest daughter got married last June, and I was invited to the wedding there, and that was incredible.
when you meet these people, do you get the feeling that part of your daughter's there? You know, it's, I don't know how to say it. You know, like it's this person's here, but part of my daughter's there with her. With him, her.
Yes, especially Larry that has her heart. You know, like when we met at a butterfly museum, and it was beautiful and quiet, and we talked for probably 3 hours, and I shared photographs, and he literally pored over every picture as if he was really absorbing it. And it's funny, he asked me if he could have a picture of her out of the album, and the picture that he picked was her with her very best friend.
Really?
And I thought that was, yeah. So at the end, he walked me to my car and he said, you know, my wife said that I should offer to let you feel her heart. And I said, well, I think I'd like to listen.
Right.
So I actually wrapped my arms around his chest and listened to her heart. And it was really spectacular.
Special, very special indeed. And you, obviously, not just with your daughter's donations and what she was able to help other people, yourself, because you are a volunteer now, I guess, with the New England Organ Bank, as well as you've got a memorial scholarship in the name of your daughter as well.
Right. It's like when you lose something as close as a child. I think that it was important to stay busy, and so it was always, what's the next thing I can do? You know, I got my license plate with her name on it. You know, I raised funds for a couple of different charities that she had an interest in, had a special bead made to fundraise, called the Kenzie bead. It's just always, what can I do next? What can I do next? Just to stay positive.
Right. And that includes sponsoring two children in Kenya and Haiti, I think it is?
Yes, I do. In fact, the young lady that's in Kenya, Mackenzie and I, my daughter and I, when she was younger, we selected this girl together. We went online and we picked her out, and the young lady was 5 at the time, and now she is 15, I guess.
Wow.
15 or 16, yeah. So, you know, I've written to her all along, and Kenzie had something, you know, had a vested interest there too, so.
But yeah. And the thing is, as I said early at the beginning, and like you said, with the sort of messages, you know, like the fortune cookie messages and stuff, they never... In a lot of ways, they never leave you. You get the odd, what do you call, God winks, is it you call?
Well, I call them God winks, little affirmations, but I'll tell you, there's some pretty cool affirmations, and I'll share one that just happened a couple months ago.
Please do.
Okay, so a couple months ago, I was thinking, geez, you know, it's been a year since I've written my book. I've kind of lost the passion, although I don't want to lose the passion, but it's just, you know, it's a year old now. And I said, God, you know, you just got to put the fire in me. You got to put the passion back in me. It's very important. And I came home from work, and there was a message on my phone, and it was a man, and he said, hello, you know, could you call me back and tell me where I can buy your book? So I called him back, and he said, a friend told me I should buy your book. And I told him where it was for sale and, you know, thanked him and hung up. But all night, I tossed and turned thinking, wow, I should have probably inquired why. Maybe he had a loss. Maybe he needed to talk. So I called him the next day, and I offered to go meet him. Of course, my husband didn't know.
Right.
And I offered to go meet this man and to actually sell him a book, and then I could sign the book. And he agreed. And when I got to the department store where I was meeting him, he got out of his car and he knew who I was. He called me by name and he motioned me over and he said, "Get in the car." And I thought, well, I'm not going to get in the car.
Right.
And, you know, and so he got in the car and he rolled the window down. He goes, "No, get in the car." And I reached in and gave my purse and gave him the book and said, "Well, here, I've autographed the book." And so he kind of, he didn't know what to do. So he reached up over his visor and he pulled down this note card, and it was my handwriting. I recognized the note card and I looked at him and I kind of said, "Well, I don't understand." He said, "Well, now will you get in the car?" So I got in the car. I said, "Well, clearly I must know you because that's my handwriting, but I don't know who you are." And he said, "Marcy, I'm Michael's father." Michael is the gentleman that has my daughter's lungs.
Ah.
And this man's wife had been corresponding with me. And so this man there that was meeting me started to cry. And I said, no, I'm okay. I really am. He goes, "It's not you. It's me. I've lost my wife." So as we talked, he said, "I really wanted to buy your book to give to Michael. I'm hoping that Michael will eventually want to meet you." And I said, "Oh, you know, that's great." He said, "I want to give it to him for his birthday." And I said, "When's that?" And he said, "June 18th. And I said, "Oh my gosh, that's my birthday." So that was pretty cool.
Right.
But then, we talked for a little while. And then, you know, he said, "Please don't tell my family that I've contacted you." I can't even believe he found me.
Right.
Because, again, it's all very confidential, but he found me. And I said, "Oh, I won't say a word. I haven't written to Michael for a long time." Well, the next day, he texts me on my phone, this older man, and he goes, "Oh, my gosh, your book, I need another copy for my daughter." And I said, "Have you already read it?" And he said, "Are you kidding? Do you think I could put it down?" And so he said, "May I call you?" So I'm at work, but I let him call me, and he says, "You're not going to believe what happened. I got up early this morning. I'm reading the newspaper, and I'm reading St. Patty's Day Division. Read visions of the parades," but he said, "my and it's Miss New Hampshire." Said, "Can you believe it? There's another Mackenzie Good, and she's from the town that my daughter teaches in."
Oh my goodness!
These are the little God winks. And so, anyway, after about a month, I got a Facebook friend request from this other Mackenzie Good's mom, and she said, "I'm the other Mackenzie Good's mother," and we've become friends. And she said, "I really believe that there's a reason that we've connected."
I say this a lot. I mean, it's and it sounds stupid, but I book these shows up, I know you must, I'm months and months ahead, and yet the number of times that I've got 1, 2, 3 shows linking together about the same theme, the same subject. And I don't plan them that way. I just, it's the next date I've got available sort of thing. But it so amazes me that these things happen. And they happen.
I think God's just putting the pieces together.
I'm sure it happens for a reason in that. Now, obviously, the book's there. And from what you're saying, and it's fantastic, you know, the way it's been able to help a lot of people along the way. Are you thinking of writing a follow-up at all?
Well, I actually write a blog, and it's called A God Wink, agodwink.com. And I put little inspirational stories on there, just things that happen, oddities, but yet, when you think about it, you know, if you're a believer, then there is a plan and there is a purpose for everything that happens. And so I think at one point I may compile some of my stories and put together another book.
No, I think so. That would be great. As you say, God winks subtle messages from above. And that's what it is. You know, it's somebody telling us, whether it's in views or whether it's in words or whether it's in thoughts or something like that. Something's there helping you, and guiding you.
Can I share a really fun one?
Of course. Whatever you want to do, please do.
So maybe it was like the second year of her passing. It was her birthday weekend, and I was up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, tootling around the shops with a friend, and I we parted. She went into one store and I went down an alley and went into this little store. And it was a really tiny shop and they had some upscale furnishings. And in the back, there was some vases on the shelf and then an empty spot. But there was a little piece of purple paper. And purple's been my favorite color and my daughter's too. And I reached up and I grabbed the piece of purple paper and took it down. And it said, "Keep calm because I love you, Mom."
Really?
I mean, I don't, yeah. And I'm like, well, oh my gosh. Of course, I started to cry and went to the cash register and I asked, you know, why was that there? And she said, I don't know. Maybe my mom put it there because it was a mom and daughter that were running the store. But I don't need to know why it was there. It served my purpose.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Some people start going into it too deep and why and what and how and everything. No, it serves a purpose. That's all you can ask for
it
in
was
life.
There.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things, obviously, a lot of people talk about is this donation of organs. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, you got it on your driving license now and all this sort of stuff. And just the joy that the tragedy that happened to your daughter has been then able to bring life to other people. The joy to yourself. It must. People listening to the show must realize that, you know, something like that is really worthwhile doing.
We have an extra chapter to my daughter's life. You know, it's life-changing for these people. I have beautiful extended family now because of it. I'm going to a 50th birthday party this weekend for Al's wife, Al, the man that has her pancreas,
right.
And I went to his 50th birthday last year. You know, it's just like I have this extended family now.
Right. I mean, and the thing is, these days, I mean, it used to be, you know, it was eyes, and then, you know, the heart came along and the kidneys. But these days, there's so much that can help other people.
That's right. You can donate skin. I mean, you can donate muscle. People think that there are age restrictions. There truly is not any age restriction. I mean, if you're a 90-year-old person, you might not be able to give your heart, but you might be able to donate a muscle or skin or something to help somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people don't think about that. And obviously with now, as I said earlier on, you know, you're a volunteer with the New England Organ Bank and was it Donate for Life? I think it's called Bank and Donate for Life. You're obviously able to help encourage people to do that sort of thing.
Absolutely. You know, there are a lot of misconceptions. They think that, you know, if your family member or, you know, is on death's door, that the doctors won't try to heal you if you're registered as a donor, but it's not the case at all. It's a separate team of doctors. So, you know, the doctors that are caring for your loved one, the priority is to help you, help your loved one. But if it's to a point where they're incapacitated and there's no hope for, you know, a life as we know it for them, and the decision is made that they're going to have to come off life support, then this other team of doctors is then brought in if the family, you know, chooses to make that decision.
Yeah, I've forgotten. Yeah, there must be a sort of count, but I think it's like a dozen people, if not more, you can help, you know, from one, you know, person who donates.
Hundreds. I mean,
if they go to the skin and muscles, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Exactly. Right. For organs, I mean, we just chose to give my daughter's major organs. I just elected not to donate her eyes. She had a head injury, so one of the eyes was not functioning anyway. Her eyes were her trademark. That was what the decision that we made. She had beautiful eyes. I don't know. They were her eyes. But it was just my decision. Yeah.
The picture on the book, Wish You a Good Journey, is that your daughter?
That is my daughter. And so the picture was a selfie.
Right.
She took lots and lots of pictures, and I found that on her computer. And it was actually taken on the school bus. She had taken it looking out the window. And the background is actually the accident site. And
really? Oh, wow.
I captured a beautiful sunrise one morning. And people say, how do you drive by the accident site daily? Because I drive by it maybe two or three times a day.
Right.
And I said, I drive by it with hope and with joy. You know, I see these beautiful sunrises. So I snapped a picture and the artist was able to put them together for me for the cover.
It's come out beautiful. And I can see what you mean about her eyes. And she looks like she takes after you with them as well, looking at the picture of you. So
thank you.
Very nice. Yeah. Anyway, time is whizzing by, as it always does when we have such an interesting guest as yourself. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your book.
Well, thank you very much. So the book is available on Amazon.com and also BarnesandNoble.com. And it's also available on my blog site, agodwink.com. And I guess that would probably be it. It's in some local stores, but I think that'd be the best way to find it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Marcy. It's been a pleasure chatting to you. And thank you for the effort you made to be able to talk to us today. It's been great having you on the show.
It worked out perfectly. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Marcy Heath, let me get this right, Robitaille, it's French, Robitaille, and been talking about her great book, Wish You a Good Journey, Living Life with Eyes and Heart Wide Open. Terrific book. And as you say, as she said, you can find more about her and the book at agodwink.com, agodwink, all one word, agodwink, agodwink.com. Highly recommend this book. I tell you, it's great for the heart, great for understanding for a lot of people as well. And a lot of people have obviously from a tragedy, she's been able to help a lot of people, not just with the book and with the donations, but just with her own help and how her life's been able to help other people. Well, that's it for now. I will be back tomorrow. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.